This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
During the Massachusetts Democratic Senate debate this week, a question to Elizabeth Warren.
To help pay for his law school education, Scott Brown posed for Cosmo. How did you pay for your college education?
Turned into a back.
I kept my clothes on.
And forth.
Thank God.
Meanwhile, members of the Occupy Boston protests were having their own kind of call and response.
I believe that the people's mic,
I believe that the people's mic,
is an incredibly effective,
is an incredibly effective
mode of communication.
Mode of communication.
Also this week, Nevada pushed up its primary date, meaning New Hampshire could be voting as early as the first week of December.
And Blue Cross Blue Shield and Partners Healthcare reached an agreement to try to bring down the cost of healthcare.
Well, joining us now to review the week's news is Julie Mohegan, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the Boston Herald. Welcome back, Julie.
Thank you.
Also with us is Joan Vinaki, columnist for the Boston Globe. Great to have you back, Joan.
Nice to be here.
Well, let's start off with the Senate race in Massachusetts. You heard that little back and forth between Senator Scott Brown and Harvard Law School professor and former White House special advisor Elizabeth Warren. Both were truly, clearly trying to make some jokes, but it's gotten folks a little riled up. Julie, what did you make about the back and forth?
Well, botched jokes are sort of seem to be the theme of campaigns these days. I thought it was a fairly thoughtless comment on the part of Senator Brown. I think that it wasn't helped by the fact that it was on a radio station so it's kind of three guys sitting around chuckling about, you know, a grandmother posing nude or whatever. So I think it wasn't helped. But I was in the audience at the debate, and I also thought that the comment Elizabeth Warren made came across as pretty sanctimonious when she made the comment. It was sort of a moral superiority to her comment that I kept my clothes on. And it was sort of said with a little bit of her, you know, nose raised a little bit.
Well, you know, I wondered about that. And just to sort of remind listeners who may not remember in detail what it was a reference to, it was a reference that when Senator Scott Brown was a law school student, he had posed nude, almost, I believe, for Cosmo magazine. Was that it?
Oh, yeah. It was for Cosmopolitan, yeah. He was modeling at the time, and I think, somebody mentioned, I think his sister got him involved in this pose.
Joan, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Julie up to a point. I mean, I think Senator Brown and the DJ sounded like a couple of guys making jokes, you know, over beers in a man cave or something like that. I didn't have quite that negative reaction to Elizabeth Warren, and I think the reaction is going to break down that way, kind of along ideological lines. But I think the bigger issue for Senator Brown is it really shows that he's a little bit rusty on the stump. Mm. He's really, you know, kind of been a senator in a bubble, hasn't done press conferences, has limited contact with the press, communicates via statement. And now he's out in the rough and tumble, and I think we're really going to see, Scott Brown unleashed. We didn't see that when he first ran because it was a very short, intense campaign that was all about advertising and one good line in a debate, and this is going to be really different for him.
Well, we have a little bit more tape from Senator Brown in that interview that he gave. He went on to say, after he said, you know, at least I, well, you know, he went on to say this.
Bottom line is, you know, I didn't go to Harvard. I went to the School of Hard Knocks, and I did whatever I had to do to pay for school.
Right.
And for people who know me and know what I've been through, my mom and dad married and divorced four times each, and, you know, some real challenges growing up, whatever. You know, let him throw stones. I did what I had to do.
Julie Mohegan, this is really interesting to me because, of course, in the past year, Senator Brown has come out with that book, his autobiography, that had a lot of revelations about the level of detail and struggle that he did face as a young man growing up. But at the same time, Elizabeth Warren didn't exactly slide through life either. She has quite an interesting and challenging life story as well. So is this going to turn into sort of a life story versus life story campaign after some time?
To some extent, it might. I think those additional comments that he made in that interview reflected the fact. I think he was genuinely stung by what she said during the debate. I mean, I think that he does have a certain sensitivity to the idea that that she's sort of the anointed one by a lot of the elites. And frankly, it's a campaign strategy as well. I mean, that's what his handlers are trying to get across. But I do. I got the sense that he was trying to really get that message across, that he wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and obviously neither was she.
Joan, in fact, Elizabeth Warren was married when she was 19, had a child soon thereafter, put herself through law school. I mean, that's the school of hard knocks too, if you ask me.
I guess, but I find it hard to believe that this campaign is going to come down to who went through the harder school of hard knocks. And I also find it hard to believe that he was all that stung by her quip during the debate. In that book that he, in which he detailed the tough part of his life, I believe there are a lot of photographs of him from his modeling days, which he was not too shy about showing off what everybody has pretty much concluded was a pretty good body at the time. So,
but I think it was, when I say stung, I mean more so by the sort of moral judgment that he shouldn't have done that. There was somehow that was unacceptable for him to have done that.
She was asked a question. She gave an answer. I have a feeling this is going to be one of those so-called tempests in a teapot, and by next week they'll be on to some other really important issue.
I agree, and I think they should be, because, there are 250,000 people out of work in Massachusetts, and obviously there are more important issues to talk about.
Well, there are actually important developments in the Senate race that have happened today. One of the candidates, Democratic candidates, Bob Massey, dropped out. He actually spoke to WBUR this morning, and let's hear a little of what he had to say.
The momentum has really changed in this race, and so we looked at everything that we could imagine happening over the next few months. We have money in the bank. We raised some money in the last quarter, but we just didn't see the dynamics changing. So this seemed like the logical conclusion.
Joan, does it feel to you as if, because it seems, or maybe we in the media are spending so much time and attention on Elizabeth Warren, that the other candidates are going to peel away slowly over time?
Well, I think that's certainly the hope of the Democratic Party in Massachusetts. And I've been sort of somewhat critical of that whole sort of mindset that they should just elbow aside everybody that did have the courage to get into this race and say that they wanted to challenge Scott Brown. On the other hand, you have to be realistic in politics. If you can't raise money, if you can't get what we used to call ink, if you can't get a lot of coverage, if one line from a debate about taking clothes off or not taking clothes off becomes, the defining moment, I think Bob Massey just looked at it and said, it's not there for me this time.
Mm. As both of you have said, there are really substantial issues to be discussing. And this question of money and how much it takes to run a campaign these days really seems to matter with every passing election year. I mean, we found out today that City Year co-founder Alan Casey, and also another Democratic candidate, he released his quarterly campaign figures. In the latest round, he raised $365,000, bringing his total fundraising in the past two quarters to $1.3 million. Now, Elizabeth Warren has yet to release her fundraising figures. But even when she does, Julie Mahegan, $1.3 million already in Casey's sort of war chest seems like a lot of money. I mean, do we expect Casey to be spending this cash, or does it keep him as a viable candidate early in the game?
I don't think there's any sort of coincidence that the candidates who are considered the most viable in this campaign are the ones who have the ability to raise them, or have either raised or have the ability to raise the most money. Elizabeth Warren obviously has the support of a lot of national Democrats. Alan Casey has a broad network, a grassroots network. He was able to raise a lot of money during the special election. And everybody else is sort of everybody else at this point. They may stay in, some of those folks may stay in the race, but I think the absence of a lot of funding is going to inhibit their ability to get their messages out.
Joan, I wanted to throw a question to you, because last time around in the special election, we found out in the last couple of weeks that a lot of money for Senator Scott Brown, he was a candidate then, was coming in nationally. It seems like we might be, it'd be safe to say that something similar would happen to whoever the Democratic candidate's going to be this time around.
That's the expectation and a lot of the momentum behind Elizabeth Warren's candidacy, that she could attract money from the national, at the national scale, not just local. 1.3 million is a lot of money to me, but it's not a lot up against, what does Scott Brown have, $10 million?
At least that much.
So that's what the Democrats are looking at, and sadly, these campaigns do come down to money in a lot of ways. And Warren's forte, partly, is just appealing to different national liberal groups that will give her money.
Well, we've got to take a quick break because there is some more news of the week to discuss when we come back. I'm joined by Joan Vinaki, Boston Globe columnist, and Julie Mahegan, deputy editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the news of the week in review with our guest, Joan Vinnocchi, columnist for the Boston Globe, and Julie Mahegan, deputy editorial page editor with the Boston Herald. Moving on to another huge story of the week, and that is the Occupy Boston movement, which is related, of course, to the Occupy Wall Street movement in New York City. Julie, let me just ask you straight away, what do you make of how the Occupy fill-in-the-blank city movement has grown and what's been going on here in Boston?
Well, I think it's been quite interesting to see the response here in Boston. You know, we've managed, unlike New York, where there's been a significant conflict between the demonstrators and the police, in Boston it's like one big, you know, happy family down there. You've got demonstrators talking about how nice the police are. You've got the police providing, you know, trash services and electricity, and I think it's perfectly harmless at this point. If it were to cross any kind of a line, then I think, you know, you'd see the city crack down fairly quickly and not necessarily play so nice with some of these folks. I think, you know, there are the issues that there always are with these things, which is there a focus, and you know, what exactly are the demands? But you know, it's. They're having a good time down there right now.
Joan, they may be having a good time, but I guess they're also trying to make a point. I mean, your thoughts on, again, we in the media have been saying quite frequently, there's no message here. But when I went down there, I heard people saying loud and clear, our message is that, you know, we do not like the way the economy is structured. We don't like the way that the top 1% of earners are earning orders of magnitude more money than the average working American. I mean, is that not enough to get across the message to politicians?
I think it needs to be a bit more specific. I mean, I'm all in favor of protests, and I did grow up during an age of protest, although I was more an observer than a participant. Maybe I was, you know, a journalist early on, or not marching down the streets, but watching the marching. Back then, I mean, there were specific things against the war in Vietnam, for specific civil rights, against economic injustice. Well, that's a nice cause. I do think you have to get specific. Is it about, you know, raising the taxes on the so-called rich? You know, narrow it down, get a focus. If you don't have a focus, you can't have a demand that gets delivered on. So I think that is an issue.
Is it any less focused than what the Tea Party movement originally was, Julie, you think?
I think they had, as Joan said, there were some specific concerns outlined there. I mean, healthcare reform was a huge motivating factor for a lot of people with the Tea Party, and that was very specific. There was a bill on the table. There was legislation that they could protest. I mean, of course, I think you saw some of the same lack of focus when you went to some of these rallies. And you show up at a Tea Party rally, and there's somebody carrying a sign about healthcare reform, but then there's somebody carrying a sign about, you know, Obama's birth certificate or something like that. So I think you're always going to have some of that. But I think that I think progressives and liberals are hoping that they have as much of an impact as the Tea Party has, but I'm not sure yet that they're even close.
I think Julie is really right to point to the health care reform issue, because that really was a motivating force for the Tea Party. And, you know, just the overarching theme of less government, no taxes. And it is more specific and it's easier to focus on.
I do want to get to one last story very briefly before we share our hubbubs, and that is that the state of Nevada has declared that it's going to move its primary to January 14th, meaning the Granite State in New Hampshire may be voting in its primary as early as December 6th. How could it be, Julie?
Well, I mean,
year before the actual election.
I know. As somebody who writes about politics and is sort of, you know, a junkie about this stuff, I probably should love the idea, but of a longer presidential campaign. But it sort of exhausts me even just thinking about it. But I think that the Republicans are trying to, in individual states, both are trying to seek their own advantage by having an impact on the final outcome, but they're also hoping to gel around one specific candidate so that they can sort of begin the process of trying to unseat the president,
Joan,
as soon as possible.
Quickly, I'd say, you know, call me a cynic, but I think this is mostly engineered for Mitt Romney. He wants to do to the GOP field what Elizabeth Warren is trying to do here in Massachusetts, you know, quickly elbow aside rivals and, you know, get the nomination. New Hampshire, Nevada, Florida. If he can win there, it would be over, wouldn't it?
Hmm. Well, now it's time for our hubbubs that we usually share at the end of the week. Julie Mahegan, let's start with you. Your hubbub.
Well, I just wanted to draw attention to that there's an experiment going on in the federal courts and in our federal court here in Boston to start using cameras in the courtroom, which obviously is not allowed in federal courts right now. And now you shouldn't expect to see Whitey Bulger's next appearance in court on, you know, live on Fox 25 or anything like that. But it's a pilot program. It's 3 years. It's only civil cases. All the lawyers have to agree.
Although you could see it over the internet in some of those cameras, I guess.
Well, right now, this pilot program is exclusive to civil cases.
Yeah.
So maybe not yet. But, so it's very much a sort of incremental progress. But I think, you know, in the interest of the public who wants access to court proceedings and what goes on in the judicial process, I think baby steps are pretty welcome right
it's
now.
It's an interesting pilot program, really. Joan Vernocchi, your hubbub.
Well, in the spirit of the Elizabeth Warren, Scott Brown, you know, sink to the superficial, I saw a little item about, it's not really, maybe not that superficial, but high school in Great Barrington, where the principal has called off all dances until the students and administrators could decide on what are appropriate dance moves.
Oh.
Apparently, the kids have been doing what they call grinding, and they all walked out in protest when she said no more of it. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's really hard to, you know, decide what's appropriate. And you got Patrick Swayze, who made an entire career of dirty dancing. So it just seems like one of those things that it's a good thing to have kids wanting to come to a dance. I hope they come to some conclusion here.
Call me old-fashioned, but Patrick Swayze wasn't grinding, was he?
In the Catholic schools, it was always to leave room for the Holy Ghost. That was always the rule in the Catholic schools.
Anthony, wrap us up with your
All
hubbub.
Right, my hubbub requires a bit of a soundtrack, so Tim, hit it. All right, Motown. Why are we talking Motown? Because Detroit, we are all Detroit fans here in Boston. And of course, I'm talking about the Detroit Tigers, who dispatched the Yankees, kicked them out of the postseason yesterday evening. And that made me really happy. Not only that, they beat them 3-2 in Yankee Stadium, which made it extra sweet. But I'm rooting for the Tigers because, Detroit's down on its luck. They could use a boost, and they could use a World Series boost. So go Tigers.
It was like when the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
New Orleans needed that. Excellent. Well, Joan Vernocchi, columnist for the Boston Globe, thank you so much as always.
Nice to be here.
And Julie Mahegan, deputy editorial page editor for the Boston Herald. Great to have you as well.
Thank you so much.